Hello again. Oh, yes, hello, listeners.
Hey up, this is Object Block Radio. And tonight we've got a special guest, Taishani, who's come to let us listen to her radio poem. Radio play, actually.
It's Milky White Light.
Inky.
Black.
Hole.
Hello.
Hi, Tai.
Hello.
What's your name?
What's your name?
Jitterbug.
God. Liber Pater,
which in the 3rd century BC exploded into the wild nocturnal orgies of the Bacchanalia.
Later, suppressed by the state.
Disgusts me and turns my stomach. Not just you, everything. And love, most of all. Yours as much as anyone else's. The sentimental tripe you dish out. Want me to tell you what I think of it? I think it's like making love in the crapper. Do you get me now? All the sentiment you trot out to make me stick with you hits me like an insult, if you want to know.
And to make it worse, you don't even realise it. You're the one that's rotten because you don't understand. You're satisfied with beating the rubbish other people throw.
You think it makes sense? People have told you there's nothing better than love. They told you it'll go down with everybody, everywhere and always, and it's good enough for you. Well, I say, fuck their love! You hear? Their putrid love doesn't go down with me. Not anymore. You've missed the train. You're too late. It won't go down anymore. And that's that. What a stupid thing to get steamed up about. Why do you have to make love? Considering all the things that are happening, all the things we see around us. Or are you blind? More likely, you just don't give a damn. You wallow in sentiment when you're a worse brute than anybody. You want to eat rotten meat with love sauce? Does that help it down? Not with me. If you don't smell anything, it's your hard luck. Maybe your nose is stuffed up. If it doesn't disgust you, it's because you're stupid, the whole lot of you. You want to know what it is that comes between you and me? Alright, I'll tell you. A whole life is what comes between you and me. Isn't that enough for you?
Afraid of understanding me, I speak as you would speak. I see as you would see. I agree.
You are listening to Radio Show. And next up, we've got Milky White Light, Inky Black Hole, a performance of a radio play by Ty Shawnee. This production is recorded in front of a live audience in the studio. And now, a little picture for the benefit of the listener. The actress Maya Lubinsky is in the role of Mona Horn, an actress too. She is wearing a beautiful red dress. I sure wish y'all could see it. She really does look good enough to eat standing in front of that microphone. She has long butterscotch hair, and her lips are redder than red, slightly parted as she waits to commence. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening she is joined by the handsome Stephen Fowler, who will be creating live illustrations throughout, and the wonderful and passionate dancer Margarita Zafria, who will be interpreting the story into movement, as well as avant-prog master, the mighty David J. Smith, responding to the text with a live, improvised score. Fasten your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen, and enjoy the ride.
See. Today is September 11th, 1969.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. Is in the pill you took today. In the year 45, 45, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 55, 55, your arms are hanging limp at your sides. Your legs got nothing to do. He never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday. If man is still alive, if woman can survive,
This afternoon, I was on my way to a radio station to record a radio play called Ink Carbon Copy Carbon Milk. I play the role of an actress called Nora Moan, who suddenly freezes, bends over, falls to her knees, collapses, and dies in a recording studio. It is all very dramatic, and I didn't get much sleep last night because I was quite nervous about this scene. I felt unsure about how I would be able to do this convincingly on the radio with my voice alone and very little text. How will my silent death be transmitted? I get very anxious about dying or playing dead. I just don't like it. I'm afraid I will identify so profoundly that I will actually die. I spent the morning practicing my lines and repeatedly dying. I leave my apartment early and decide to walk to the studio to clear my head. About three blocks away from the studio, there is a psychic with a pink neon palm in the window. Since I have time to kill, I decide to go in. This is the first time I go to see a psychic. Although I would say I am very modern, and I see myself as a nihilist, I do feel reassured by finding meaning in the eyes of others. Before I open the door, I stand on the threshold and prepare a question in my mind. I look at my watch. It's 5:17. I push the door open. It is decorated with little bells and various incongruous talismans and metal objects. These make more noise than I anticipate. And a woman quickly comes from behind a dirty curtain to the entrance where I'm standing. It looks like the set of a sitcom. The woman is younger than I expect, and she is carrying a baby with a runny nose on her hip. She introduces herself as Madame Yvonda and asks me my name and what I want to know. My name is Mona Horn. Tell me who my past self. I want to be told, I say. Who is my past self? Madame Yvonda says, that'll be $5 and close your eyes. She wipes the child's green snotty nose with her shirt and places her palm on my forehead. This makes me uncomfortable. Close your eyes, she says. When I close my eyes, I see a plain, vast tundra and dry soil. And the air smells very different to anything else I have ever smelt. I can smell the earth and leaves and a sour, salty smell and feces. This is my scent. I look down at dirty, tan, muscular stomach and thighs, quite small. My face feels strange. I touch the contours of it with my rough fingers. I feel a very heavy brow, a protruding mouth and jaw, a little monkey-like. My face is covered in wiry hair and with little hard knots in it. I can smell my breath. It is foul-smelling. I glide my tongue along my gums between the few teeth I have. One of them is broken and jagged. A swollen pain at the base of it pulsates with a steady beat of my heart. My mouth feels furry. I grab some leaves from a nearby tree and chew on them. A sharp streak of pain races through my head. I howl in agony. This is an odd, surprising sound, guttural and primal. I spit out the bitter, brittle leaves. The metallic taste of blood is in my mouth. and it floods with saliva. I sit down on a rock. The surface is hot and dry behind my thighs, and I think about the girl, now woman, from the tribe. I think about her many teeth, her skin, her small breasts, her enlarged nipples. I think about how I would like to move inside her when I get back to the caves later. I feel a tense pull at the root of my abdomen. I look down and see my beautiful cock. It really is extraordinary. It is quite large compared to my small stature and has a very pleasing curve to it when it is erect. It is very proud-looking and smooth. The foreskin draws back and reveals a slippery, full, pink head. It bobs around between my dirty thighs, and it gets very, very hard and throbbing. I take it in my hands and stroke it firmly until I ejaculate, and my semen lies in a little pool between my feet. I watch it spread, getting fat on the edges before gaining ground, then being absorbed by the dry, thirsty earth, forming a dark patch that looks like a rising calyx flower. I want to take it with me. When I get back to the caves, the last of the dusk is being consumed by a luminous darkness, and stars are burning pinholes into the navy chalk of the sky. The tribe, all Neanderthals, greet me and are happy to see me return. We gather around a fire inside the cave and watch the storyteller woman attentively. I've heard this one before, so I lie back on the soft, warm fur and chew carefully on a piece of dried meat. The giant shadow of the storyteller flickers on the walls of the cave. She appears small compared to it, like the shadow's child. She is pretending to be a bear. We all laugh and admire the performative quality of her gestures. I continue looking at her projected shadow. The extended limbs look grotesque and unnatural as they climb up the surface of the cave. I am afraid to look at her in case her shadow and her true form have become the same terrifying creature. Transfixed and rigid with fear, my forehead glazed with a tepid slick of sweat, heart pounding in my ears, I see this formidable shadow suddenly freeze, bend over,